How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, part of your daily routine. Thank you for taking us with you wherever it is that you are going, driving to work, home from work, on the way to the gym, whatever it is. Thanks for including us. Today we're getting into the mailbag. We asked you to submit your questions on Twitter using the hashtag RainandJays, and a few of you did. So thanks for that. We're going to get to those in a minute. We'll mystery machine it. We haven't done the mystery machine in a little while. That took kind of an extended all-star break. We'll do that. And first, we're going to talk about Isaiah Thomas. When I say we, I mean the Rain and Jays, Sam Jam Packard, John Corrales here for the duration of this podcast. So let's get into it. Isaiah Thomas not playing in the New York-Philly road trip, not going to Brooklyn, not going to the 76ers, right knee bone bruise. I don't think it's a big deal. I personally think it's a little bit of an excuse, because after the game, he even said, hopefully we stay healthy and we can play this thing out. And then the next day, he's not making the trip. He's got a right bone bruise. So I think this is an excuse to get Isaiah Thomas a little added rest, because he's the one guy who didn't have an all-star break. I want to hear what your thoughts are on this, Sam.
I would generally agree that it's not a big deal. I'm not questioning, or I don't know if the injury is made up. It definitely feels like something if there was an actual game against, you know, actual opponents and not the Brooklyn Nets and the Philadelphia 76ers, he would be playing. But it's you're entering playoff time, and you want your players, your best players, to be as healthy as possible. And we've seen Isaiah just kind of take, because he is so small, he kind of takes bigger hits and goes to the floor a bunch. So why not keep him out when there's two winnable games out there? Yeah, and I agree with you. It's not the biggest deal in the world. I'm a little upset because I have tickets to both of those games, and I would rather see the tiny sportsman in there. But other than that, I don't think it's a huge deal for the Celtics, and it's kind of I think it's a way to kind of make Isaiah sit, because I don't think Isaiah would ever accept just a DNP rest. But if you trick him into resting by saying he has a some sort of injury, maybe he's more accepting of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is just an opportunity. I think he probably did hit the floor and probably did like do something that's not a big deal that he probably brushed off. But if they said, you're inactive, you're not even traveling with us, stay home, that's an easy way. I don't think if this was a trip to Washington or to Toronto that he would sit. But going back to yesterday's podcast, I think this is an opportunity to start Marcus Smart at the point guard. I think the stuff I was talking about yesterday, starting him at the top of the key, running the offense, and having him either drive or in the course of the offense shift down to the corners and take those corner threes. I think this is an opportunity for him to do this against bad competition. The Nets are a mess. The 76ers are a mess. This is a chance for him to have two really, really good games
I think he's going to have games that are so good that some people are going to start saying, hey, look at how he is as a point guard. Maybe we should bring Isaiah off the bench. I think he's going to be good enough to inspire some trollish type of comments. So we'll see how that goes.
It doesn't take much to inspire dumb people on the internet, but I think it's also an opportunity to see what Al Horford, number one option, looks like. Maybe he can ride some of the momentum after that Timberwolves game and put together back-to-back 20-point games, which is something that we have not seen from Al Horford in the longest of times.
Yeah, and Brian Coleman on Twitter, let's just transition this into the Twitter comments, because I don't think the Celtics, according to Adam Himmelsbach, they don't care so much. They're not concerned about this at all. So it just seems like they're resting him. Isaiah didn't get an All-Star break, like I said. He played in the game somewhat. He didn't get to relax like everybody else did. He did the skills competition. So getting him a few days off, I think, is a good idea. But to your point, you know, this is the only way to get him to accept that. Brian Coleman asks, if Casey Jones tried to rest Bird for a nationally televised game against a rival, you think LB would go for it? I'll even go a step further. I don't think Larry Bird would want to sit against in a game that wasn't televised against the worst team in the league. I just don't think Larry Bird was willing to sit for anything.
He was good to lie on the ground when his back hurt. What era Larry Bird are we talking about? Are we talking like 1984 Larry Bird or like early 90s Larry Bird? Because it's early 90s Larry Bird. It may be a little bit more accepting of a kind of something like that.
It's an interesting debate, though, because a lot of the old timers will, like, was it Wilbon on Twitter was talking about, oh, let me ask Jalen Rose about sitting. He never sat a game. I don't remember him taking a rest day. I think the older people are sitting there saying, what's this about rest? What are guys resting for? We didn't used to rest way back in the day. But, you know, first of all, it's different now. We have more information. We have statistics. We have analysis. The analytics show that the odds of an injury go up at a certain point, at a certain number of minutes. It's like people complaining in baseball about, well, what's this 100 pitch count? I remember a guy going out there throwing 180 pitches. You know, it's different. It's a different era. It's a different time. These guys, I'm pro rest. I think resting them every once in a while is a good thing. You keep them fresh. You've got $100 million investments in some of these guys. Let's do what we can to keep them healthy. I think they're pushing their bodies a little bit harder. They're training a lot harder. It's just a different era. So I think resting guys, the research shows that doing it every once in a while is a positive thing.
Yeah, it's like there's no real reason why there's an 81 or 82 game schedule. And it's not something that you're not going to see games go away anytime soon because of the money they bring in. But if they had to go back and redesign it, just based on all the kind of the science you were mentioning before, there's no way they would have them play that many regular season games just because you want the best product on the floor at all times. And if you shorten the schedule to something like 60 games, you're going to get healthier players, less injuries, and then just a higher level of basketball. So, yeah, I agree with you. Rest is generally good, and the more we learn about kind of the toll it takes on an NBA player's body to go through the entire season and the weird sleep schedules they have and all the travel, it's the more I think you're going to see players getting rested, especially later in the season as teams prepare for the playoffs.
Here's another thing that's different about the league now. First of all, there are more playoff games. The series, they used to be 5 games. Now there's 7 games in the opening round. The season lasts longer. There used to be NBA finals used to be played in May. I think once upon a time in April. Once upon a time, the schedule wasn't 82 games. And on top of everything, guys are starting in the NBA younger. So it used to be that it was all juniors and seniors that were drafted. Now guys are coming out as freshmen. We've got a generation of players that have come out at 19 and at 19 years old have started to play 82 to 100 games as opposed to guys who came out in their senior year, like Tim Duncan, playing 100 games over the course of those 3 years. Sophomore, junior, senior year, you play 30-some-odd games if you make deep tournament runs. You know, 35 games. So those 3 years equal one run in the NBA to the finals. So I think nowadays guys start younger. They've got from 19, 20, 21, 22, that's 4 years of that. That's 400 games potentially on the high end of the scale. At the very least, that's 320 games on the low end, where in college you'd play 70 games once upon a time back in the 80s when you came out as a junior or a senior. So that's a lot, and that is cumulative. So over the course of time, that's just more pressure. It's more wear and tear. The body can only take so much. So I think nowadays things are just different. So guys need to have that bigger perspective of what the league is and what the league has become and what we're asking people to do, and as opposed to what it used to be, and just accept that this is different.
No, you're okay. Absolutely right. And you're kind of, while you're talking about that, I was just thinking about how all of that makes what LeBron James has done in his career that much more impressive. Talking about going to 7 consecutive finals, and he's just never missed time for an injury except for that kind of that weird 2-week span where he went to Miami for some random reason. But like, if you think of all the games and all the minutes, I think LeBron's already in like the top 10 or something of like minutes played or games played. It's absurd. So I know this is a Celtics podcast, so praising LeBron James is not normally where we would go. But if you consider all those factors and how productive LeBron has been during that time, it's pretty insane.
It is. It's very, very insane. So that's my take on the resting and all of that stuff. Okay, so back to Twitter. We asked you to use the hashtag #RainandJays. If you didn't use that, I'm trying to see who just added us, but I may have missed a couple here. So make sure when you send in questions, if you're looking for answers, to use the hashtag #RainandJays. So that puts it all in one place. It's easy for me to get to it. Okay, the other big topic I think that's come up this week, and I've been asked this on some of my radio stuff, from @JiveJohn. Would you still take Lonzo Ball with all of his dad baggage if the Nets pick slips to #2? That, I think, is such an interesting question. Danny Ainge addressed that on the radio this morning. We're recording this on Thursday night. So Thursday morning, he addressed this on the radio, and he said that the father stuff doesn't matter to him. If he likes the player, he likes the player, and whatever. And his dad, Lonzo Ball's dad, said that once – he says a lot of things. But he did say that once you're off on your own, you're off on your own, and that's your thing. I don't like all of the extra bullshit that he brings. I think he's looking for a lot of the attention himself. He doesn't have to grant all of these interviews. He doesn't have to go on SportsCenter. But he's also, on the other side, trying to be a savvy businessman and strike while the iron is hot. The attention is on the Ball family now. He's got two more kids that are going to be going to college. And eventually, he hopes the NBA. He's trying to build a brand. He's got that, what's that shirt, that company that's got a big bad baller or something like that, the 3Bs.
I don't know, but that sounds like something he would start.
Yeah, so he's trying to make some money, and good for him. Yeah, that's if he and his family, if this is how they want to do it, fine. That's fine. I don't want to do something stupid and pass on a guy who may be a transcendent player because his father sounds like an asshole, which I don't know if he is or not, but he sounds like one, and he's really sounded like an attention hog. But is that a reason to pass on a potentially transcendent player? I don't think so. If we got the #1 pick and if both players kind of graded out evenly, I would go with Fultz over Ball because of that. That's a tiebreaker. But if it's Ball or, I don't know, one of Jackson or something, and Ball just grades out better, then you got to take Ball and just sit down with the dad and be like, okay, this is the NBA. This is how we like to conduct ourselves. Let's we want to work with you. Just this is how we hope to conduct our business, and hopefully it works out.
I agree. I there's absolutely no reason you shouldn't take Lonzo Ball because of his father. You're taking a player. They're not the same person. He's going to have two other kids to worry about and sit on the sidelines of UCLA games and kind of say dumb things. The one caveat, and I still wouldn't, this wouldn't make me hesitate in taking Lonzo Ball, is if somehow his dad ends up being his agent, and that would be, or is like somehow involved in the contract process and is kind of demanding more money. But even with NBA contracts, it's pretty much dictated what the player is going to get for the first. If they're a top lottery pick and then deserve their rookie extension, it's pretty much dictated what they're going to get for their first eight seasons. So even that is not that big of a deal. So I would take Lonzo Ball, and I would just look forward to all the ridiculous things that his dad would say.
There would be a lot of ridiculous things. The man cannot turn down an interview, but I on a personal level, I don't like it. I don't know who he is. I obviously have never met him. Maybe whatever, but I don't like the way he comes off. I just don't like the optics. And I do think that he puts a little bit of pressure on his son. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think when you build that kind of hype up, when you're saying things like he's better than Steph and saying some ridiculous stuff like that, the one thing that it does, and in reality where it really does legitimately hurt him, is as a rookie, you need these guys. You need veterans to kind of help you out and guide you through the process of becoming a pro. This is unlike anything else any player has ever experienced. Jaylen Brown admitted that before the Minnesota game, saying, you know, he's learned how to take care of himself. The guys have helped him along. And that if he had known at the beginning what it was going to be like, he would be better. He would have figured things out earlier. But it's a process to become an NBA, professional NBA player, and go through the rigors of travel and all of your other commitments and learning the offenses, which are really just much more intense, and the schemes and how good all of the other players are. You don't need, as a rookie, a layer of all of these great players being pissed off at you already because of some dumb shit your dad said. Because they're supposed to help you out. They're supposed to guide you. And if none of those guys really care to help you out, it just makes things a little bit more difficult. And he doesn't need that. He may be able to overcome it. I'm not saying this is a huge roadblock, but that's something that you just don't need as a rookie. Rookie years are hard enough as it is. And like I said last night, with Wiggins, you can see how long it takes to develop. These guys, Lonzo Ball, as good as he might be, is going to take some time to develop. And he just doesn't need dad going out there and blowing him up in front of everybody before he gets started. So, okay. Back to the questions. We had a couple of questions about Kelly Olynyk. I'll let you go first on this
Star
one,
Kelly.
Sam.
Hashtag Star Kelly.
Okay. So, moving on. No. At Staxwell6, is there any chance Kelly Olynyk is an X factor in the first round of the playoffs? And then Tom King, who basically spammed this hashtag, Tommy King at Celtics Town, our boy, Jay King's brother, why doesn't Kelly Olynyk start or play more minutes? So, you're our Kelly Olynyk guy, so go for it.
I definitely think he can be an X factor. I'm the number one preacher in the church of Kelly Olynyk right now with his positional defense and his outside shooting and spreading the floor. As for the question about why he doesn't play as much, your guess is as good as mine, Tom King. I don't know. I've been advocating for it. It seems like he gets as much minutes as he plays himself into. If he's having a good game and is shooting with confidence, it feels like Stevens lets the leash out a little bit further, but then he can come into the game and give you kind of that bad Kelly, the over-up fake Kelly Olynyk, and it doesn't really work out. And then also I think it's somewhat matchup based. So I think those are the two issues. There's a lack of consistency on his end. And then there's just some players, either big men or a little more physical than he is, where it just doesn't work out and he's not the best matchup for what the Celtics can put on the floor.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's really not much more for me to expand on there. Kelly Olynyk, I'm a big Kelly Olynyk guy, and I think that the inconsistency hurts him, but he can be an X factor with his shooting. When he's going good, man, he is going good. So I would love to see him start before the season. I said that he should start. I can understand what Amir Johnson brings to the starting lineup. He's a better rebounder. He's a better shot blocker. He's not as – I think Kelly's defense has been very underrated. I agree with you there. But I can see Amir Johnson at the beginning when you're out there with IT and Bradley and Crowder and Horford. Those guys all spread the floor. And Amir Johnson, they'll give him space to shoot. Every once in a while he'll hit. I think he's hitting like 40% since the All-Star break from three. So how can you argue with that? I think this is the starting lineup. Maybe Brad is just like, that's set. I don't want to screw with that. But Kelly Olynyk certainly can finish games. And I think if he's going to be effective or an X factor, he'll be in there finishing games and spreading the floor, especially in tight games where they need Isaiah to go off. He's going to be more of a floor spreader, and that'll give Isaiah an opportunity to get to the rim and get those fouls. At A. McClements, 34, level of concern for Pacers or Bucks in the playoffs? George and Giannis would arguably be the best player in the series. Sam, you were talking about this the other day with Jay. You're a little afraid of Indiana in the playoffs.
I don't think the Celtics would lose a series against Indiana. I think it's more of a concern of they would have to extend more effort in a series against Indiana, because you're right, I think Paul George would be the best player on the floor. And we've seen him do this last year. He took the Raptors, I think, to six or seven games, just basically like him willing his team to victory. So I don't really think that the Indiana is good enough to win a series against the Celtics. So it's just the kind of thing of like, do you waste all this energy in round one when you could be playing someone like the Miami Heat or someone like that? As for the Bucks, I'm a huge Giannis fan. I think he's quite good, but I just don't think he's in that dominant player level where he can put the entire game on his back. So I'm not really worried about the Bucks. There's a small concern about the Pacers, but not a huge concern. It's just kind of if you're saying which one you prefer, I prefer the Celtics to play some team, not the Pacers, just because I think they'd have an easier time in round one.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about the Bucks. I know Giannis can be kind of, well, he's the Greek freak, so he's freakish. But they're not ready yet. They're not. I don't think they're win a first round series ready. They've struggled to keep their hold on a playoff spot. I think that they'll be dangerous, that they might, win a game or two. It wouldn't be a sweep. I'm not saying they'll have an easier time, but I think the Celtics can handle them and can handle him to a degree more than they can some of these other matchups. I'm fine with them playing the Bucks. I'm with you. Paul George can be much more dominant and create his own shot a lot better. He's a much more reliable three-point shooter, too, than Giannis. So my level of concern is a little bit higher against the Pacers. And, they also have Miles Turner, who is a stud. So that can be problematic as well. So I agree with you on that. At Rob Parrott, if you could choose between free agents this summer, who would you take, Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin? I know Gordon Hayward had a terrible game against the Cavaliers tonight. The Utah Jazz had an opportunity. They were tied going into the fourth, and they were within two or three with about 3 minutes to go. and LeBron just took over, and J.R. Smith hit a huge three, and Gordon Hayward was really nowhere to be found. Neither was George Hill. So, but you can cherry pick bad games here and there for everybody. Gordon Hayward, I think, has emerged from budding at the beginning of the season to star player now. And I think if you put him on the Celtics, you could play him at the two or the three. You can play him and Crowder next to each other, I think. You can move Crowder to the four in certain lineups. There's no reason to say you have to get rid of Crowder to get Gordon Hayward. I don't know how that affects the backcourt. Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier. Something has to shift that way. But I've been convinced that Gordon Hayward is definitely, of those two choices, the way to go. Griffin has been injury prone. He's also a power forward. And I don't want to move Al Horford to the center. I don't want to start Griffin and Horford together. I'd rather start Hayward and Horford together because I think they would just play off each other better. And I would rather find a different option at center, maybe Ante Zizic or somebody else.
You stole literally all the points I was going to make. I agree with you that Hayward's on the upward trajectory, where Griffin, who's still very good, but he's been very injury prone, and it's just you'd be weary of giving him a kind of a max deal. And then the other thing is just there's this mythical Hayward Brad Stevens Butler connection that I would be interested in exploring. Plus, with all the drama surrounding Jay Crowder, that's just good old fashioned fun for the local media. So I'm all for that. Anything that adds just unnecessary drama to the Celtics season, I can get behind.
I would love it. I would love it. It'd be interesting to see how that goes. Justin Hunter at All Celtics Fans. Shout out to our international fans, especially our fans in Australia, who are very vocal on Twitter. But everywhere, lots of international fans love the fact that we're global and the internet can bring us together. He asks, I've been worried all season, as most have, that we're too reliant on Isaiah Thomas's scoring in the fourth. Do you feel we are making adjustments now? I'll let you go first.
No. I mean, I feel like they still pretty much rely on, like, Isaiah is still the go-to guy when it comes down to the fourth quarter. And I think the Celtics have done a better job in terms of, especially with Avery Bradley back, and other guys have stepped up and kind of lessened the need for Isaiah Thomas to score that many points. But it doesn't feel like their approach is drastically different. It still feels like all actions run through Isaiah. And teams are certainly defending Isaiah differently. And so maybe the adjustment is that they're just having to kind of reacts to a different defense, and that's leading to more other guys getting shots. But I don't think it's really the approach has been that much different from the Celtics.
I think the reliance on Isaiah Thomas is still as high as it's ever been. I think the adjustment now is not necessarily an adjustment per se, as much as it is a return to the things that were working earlier. Every once in a while, the Celtics, when they are bad, what they do is they sit back and watch Isaiah try to create, and that's not good. As great as Isaiah Thomas has been, him going one-on-one and just trying to create with no other ball movement, with no cuts, with no picks, none of that stuff, that's just not effective. That's not where he excels. When they are going great, and when Isaiah Thomas is really going in the fourth quarters, is sometimes he's off the ball. He gives the ball up and gets it back. He drives and kicks. Other guys are involved. That's when things are going. When other guys pick up a basket here and there, you don't have to do much. It just doesn't have to be all Isaiah. And I've said this before on the podcast. I will repeat it until it's no longer an issue. Put Isaiah off the ball sometimes. Do whatever you got to do to mix things up. Don't just sit there and watch him, because if you sit there and watch, the defense can just key on him, and then he gets neutralized. So he's not – that's where his size works against him, and that's just how it is. So Yeah, that's my take on the adjustment. All right, before we get into some more fun things, like I said before, Tommy King spammed us. So let's get into a couple of these. Is Marcus Smart more useful playing with or without Isaiah Thomas? I thought him with IT off ball would be great, but the numbers don't agree. I hate Marcus Smart off the ball with Isaiah Thomas. So I'll just quickly repeat what I said last night. If Isaiah Thomas and Marcus Smart are playing together, Marcus Smart needs to be the point guard and the primary ball handler for most of the time. And if you don't do that, then he's ineffective. If you do that, you can run Isaiah Thomas off the screens and run some action for him. Then he can get the ball and create and score. And then maybe Isaiah Thomas gets those corner threes again. But I mean, then Marcus Smart gets those corner threes. But that's the only way Marcus Smart's going to be effective. You play him off the ball with Isaiah Thomas, forget it. He's an offensive liability practically.
No, I agree. I think Smart's best role in this team is kind of as backup point guard. And it makes things difficult because I also think he's one of the top five best players on the team, and so is Isaiah. So you would imagine that you'd want those five players out there at all times, and you'd also want the ball in Isaiah's hands. But there's definitely ways to start with Marcus Smart as the primary ball handler, get IT off the ball, and kind of start actions that way. But I would agree that they're not the best pairing as a backcourt, and that's maybe something the Celtics have to consider moving forward, especially if they end up with a top two pick or bring in someone like Gordon Hayward, just adding another guard to the position. Someone's got to go. Someone's got to leave because it's already an already crowded backcourt. So, and they're not really working that well together right now.
Okay, I think we're going to get away from some of the Celtics questions now, get to some more of our goofy Rain and Jay's questions. Back to Tommy King. We'll know Marcus Smart's behind the Jaylen Brown popcorn car, right? Ooh.
I don't think so. That feels like an Amir Johnson prank to me.
You know, he was suspiciously there with the camera, ready to document things. He saw it all happening. He must have known. But
the big dog feels like the kind of the savvy vet and the prankster, although apparently Gerald Green is the funniest member of the Celtics, according to Isaiah Thomas.
I feel bad for the ball boys who had to clean it all out. Like, somebody should have been there to be like, no, rookie has to clean that out. You got to clean your own car.
Do we know that the ball boys had to clean it out?
Oh, there was video evidence of them doing so.
Oh, that's terrible. So it's just a momentary prank, really, just torturing the ball boys in that point.
Yeah. So the clubhouse
should have just given Jaylen the ride home, and then they left the popcorn in his car in the TD Garden for the rest of the season. gotten a handful anytime they wanted some.
Yeah, they could have just parked it like up in one of the open levels there. As people walked in where they get the tickets, where you hand in your tickets, just grab a little scoop and then off you go.
Oh, my God, we could have spray-painted Jaylen Brown's mystery machine on the side and made $1 billion.
Oh, shit. Damn it. Oh, well. Missed opportunity there. Okay, let's see. What else do we have here? Alex at Straight No Chaser. This was an actual Celtics question. Who should the Celtics go for with the veteran minimum at the five next season, assuming Amir and Zeller are gone? Assuming the Celtics are looking just for a veteran minimum guy, who's available? Bogut?
He's going to be available, but I don't know if I want his... crippled old body.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the veteran minimum and you have other options ahead of him and he's just kind of like insurance, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep Olynyk, but if you start, I don't know what Zizic is going to be like, but he looks great in the EuroLeague. If for some reason he comes in and he wins that spot, maybe he's your starting center, maybe he's a backup center. If you were able to keep Olynyk, maybe he's in there. At the veteran minimum, as a guy you could just cut and just be done with, Bogut is worth a shot. And hopefully he can stay healthy and provide... He can be minimally effective. So that would be my guy.
The only other options I can see right now would be... Zaza Pachulia, JaVale McGee, or Jeff Withey? And I know Danger Cart is a huge Jeff Withey fan, so I'm going to go with Jeff Withey just in honor of Danger Cart.
Nice. I like that. Give him a shout out. At Max the Pimp with a one for an I. If you had to guess which genre each current Celtics liked, genre of music each current Celtics liked, what would you guess?
I'm guessing they all like rap music and mostly Future. And judging from Terry Rozier's Snapchat, I'm right.
Yeah. Except for Tyler Zeller. I feel like Tyler Zeller's a Christian rock kind of guy.
I feel like Tyler Zeller doesn't listen to music.
He just listens to audiobooks on the way home?
Not even audiobooks, just silence. And he just contemplates how we got
ourselves. Yeah, I feel like I'm going down the line pretty much. Who wouldn't like hip-hop on that roster?
Jonas? Jonas may be in some weird Swedish stuff we don't even know about.
Yeah, he could be into some, like, you know, Euro-techno stuff.
Or he stuff might be into some, like, there's some, like, just Swedish, like, kind of sad bands that are kind of, like, still electro but a little bit lower key. Like, I feel like Jonas maybe has some depth to him there.
Yeah, maybe. That's a solid choice. That's about it. Yeah. I think they're all, and then you get like the various levels of hip hop, like the younger guys, like this stupid trap shit, which I hate. I hate that shit. And then you got some of the guys like I'm an old school rap guy. So I think there are some guys that might be a little more into that.
What do you define as old school rap? Cause you're older than me. So our definitions are, our eras might be different.
Well, I will say old school is from like 86-ish, like a 10-year span of 80, like 86 to 95 in that range. And then 95 is about my cutoff of where things start to go. They start to change a little bit.
Not true, because Life After Death came out in 1997.
Okay.
Go on.
No, I'm just trying to think because... Yeah, well, like Illmatic and Ready to Die came out what in like 94-ish, so that still qualifies. I don't know. I guess it's a shifting measure because it's 2017. So we're talking about music that's 20 years old. So which hurts my feelings a lot. I get it.
20-year anniversary of the Notorious B.I.G.'s death.
I know. I know. I got to tell you, as much as I love and kind of was molded on the basketball courts of Rhode Island through some of that rap music, I hate that they mention the year in which they recorded their albums, because now it's just a kick in the balls to me when I hear Big Daddy Kane, Ain't No Half Steppin', and he says, 88, time to set it straight. I'm like, oh, 88. Oh, that hurts my feelings. Because I was 15 years old in 88.
John, I wasn't even born in 1998.
Yeah. That's horrible. When I go back sometimes, I'll go back to Emerson College and watch the team play, and I'll look at the program, and I'll see guys that I legitimately could have fathered, and not in an accident kind of way. Like, I legitimately could have. I mean, it might have started a little bit young, but, like, not really.
It was a planned baby.
Like, it could have been like, yeah, let's have kids. And they would be freshmen in college at this point. Maybe, like, yeah, it's disheartening to me. But anyway, that's my little music sidebar. Oh, well. What's your definition of old school?
I was going to say something similar, but like, I don't know. It's just because when I was born, but like, there's a lot of rap music that occurred before like 1991. I have a real hard time listening to, and it all sounds very, very simplistic to me. Like, I went down to the store today. It was pretty cool. And like, really, like, I don't know. Anytime I hear this, like kind of the 80s rap music, I kind of get cringeworthy. It's just a cringeworthy moment for me. So I would say I would be the early 90s into mid 90s is my era of rap.
You just think about it. That's like when you watch a football game now and you see the crazy offenses that Bill Belichick's throwing out there. But once upon a time, the forward pass was a major innovation. And that's that level of rap was around the time when people were starting to figure out the forward pass. You know, Cool Herc, African Bambaataa, Red Alert. Those guys, when they were, you know, spinning in the Bronx at parties, it was a very simplistic time. It really was two turntables and a DJ keeping a beat through, you know, spinning wax. And then somebody decided to talk over that stuff, and it you don't have the layers that it's become today. So just like anything, just like basketball, what, you know, we used to be set shots and, you know, the three-man weave that we saw the old footage. You look at that and you're like, that was basketball? Holy shit, that was terrible. But back then they were like, oh wow, look at this.
Oh yeah. So, all the young people listening right now, and I can say that as a 27-year-old, people need to go listen to African Bambaataa, Planet Rock. That song kills. I love
that song. It was, you know, it's a long journey. There's a good documentary on Netflix that
is it LL Cool J? I feel like he's on the cover. I've been meaning to watch that one.
No, it's oh shit, I'm drawing a total blank on his name. That hosts it. It's like a three or four part series. Damn it, I'll figure it out. But it's a good takes you from the Bronx to, you know, the modern era. It's Shad, who is a really good rapper himself. More recent rapper from Canada. He hosts this multi-part documentary, takes you back to the beginnings, you know, of hip hop. But that's another podcast that I'm actually planning. I'm actually planning on doing a music podcast with Dart Adams. We've talked about it. We're going to figure out a time to record that. But we've taken a big detour off of that question. But we'll talk about that more in a future podcast. All right, let's get to one more that I want to get to. Go back to Tommy King to finish this off, only because it involves his brother Jay King, and I want to throw this challenge out to him. Tommy asks, how much money do we have to raise for the ACLU for Jay King to shave his head and donate his hair? I love this. Jay King, for those of you who don't know and haven't heard,
has a rat's nest on his head.
He's grown this hair. I keep calling him Vincent because he looks like John Travolta from Pulp Fiction. I swear to God, you put them side by side, and he's Vincent. So I've been trying to get that nickname to catch on, and it hasn't. I would love to see, and here's my challenge to Jay King. If you do decide to cut your hair, when you decide that it's time to go back to a buzz cut, let's do it. Let's raise money. Let's do it for like Locks of Love, that they actually, you can donate hair for cancer patients. I would love to have a fundraiser to cut Jay's hair and donate it whenever he decides to go back to looking like a, you know, a clean cut young man.
I feel like he's off the deep end. I feel like he's just never going to cut it now, and we're going to need to have an intervention for him. And when we have that intervention, we should definitely raise some money to get it cut. My other idea was he should make some sort of pledge to not cut his hair until the Celtics reach the NBA Finals.
Ooh. Oh, wow. That'd be interesting.
I like the idea of connecting his hair length to kind of the Celtics performance, because then you can see because, you know, the journalists are not supposed to be kind of rooting for any games, but you could really see Jay just jump on the Celtics bandwagon so he can cut that rat's nest off his head.
That would be interesting. I like that idea, too. So many things, so many ways to go with Jay King's hair. I think what I would love to do is some sort of like Brutus the Barber Beefcake type of scenario where I put him in a sleeper hold and then shave his head while he's unconscious. But
all of these are great ideas.
Yeah, I think we're getting places with this one.
We should start a new segment called fucking around with Jay's hair.
What we should do is take advantage of this and not blow this opportunity and get some sort of like Head and Shoulders sponsorship. Some shampoo company has to look at Jay King's flowing locks and say, we have to get in on this. Very simple. You know, LockedOnCeltics@gmail.com. We're looking for sponsors. We're looking for a little bit of cash. Come on. It's a perfect opportunity. A local hairstylist. Maybe you own a barbershop. Maybe you own some sort of hair accessory place. Who knows? The options are endless. Let's cash in, people. Jay King has long, luscious locks. Let's turn that into some money. All right, let's get out of this podcast here. Let's do this mystery machine and get done before this thing goes further off the rails. Rapid fire. Let's go. You first.
Isaiah Thomas. Boom.
Yeah, that goes without saying. So does Al Horford. Al Horford, especially after that last game, he's a lock.
Jaylen Brown. Feel like he's been playing real well since the All-Star break, and we haven't done one since then.
Yeah. No, that's a good solid choice. It's a good solid choice. I will go Avery Bradley because he's back off of that injury and playing well. And that defense, we haven't done one in a long time. Going back to that Cavs game, that the little soft shoe routine he did staying in front of Kyrie Irving is one of the best individual defensive efforts I've seen in a very long time. And his shooting is off the charts. So Avery Bradley. Now we get to get weird. You get the weird one.
The weird one is a tough pick because I've been on the hashtag Start Kelly bandwagon for so long, but I'm going to have to give it to, I guess, my original person, Bay Crowder, just because I think he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves, and he's been kind of a steady contributor for the Celtics throughout the entire season, and his statistics are not as great as they were earlier in the year. He's not shooting the ball from three as well, but I just think Marcus Smart gets the phrase impacts winning connected to him. But I really think Jay Crowder just does a bunch of the little things well, and he doesn't get enough credit. So that's why he gets the final spot in the mystery machine.
I like that. I like that. I would have maybe I'll give maybe a just barely gets to the mystery machine as it's pulling away. Maybe a Gershon Yabusele as the guy who is back. He's back in Boston. He's signing with the Red Claws. Like, oh, shit. Or the draft and stash guy is around. Like, just to have him around.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
The Dancing Bear playing some games in the Portland Expo Center is definitely deserving. So I agree wholeheartedly with that.
Yeah. Maybe he'll find his way onto the mystery machine with some good play in Portland. All right. That wraps up the show. A nice, long, almost hour-long show to carry you through the weekend. Isaiah Thomas won't be around this weekend. Neither will we, because this is our Friday show. Sam's going to the game Friday night, Brooklyn. So am I. I'll be at Brooklyn in Friday night. So we'll meet up, grab a few beers, you know, yell at people, whatever. It's St. Patrick's Day. We're going to be wearing our green. So come on. We'll be doing that and Philly on Sunday afternoon. No Isaiah Thomas for either of those games. Hopefully it does not matter. We will be back to talk about those two games and hopefully talk about two blowout wins on our Monday show, which we will record at some point on Sunday. Until then, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading the show. Thank you for subscribing wherever you find your podcast on any podcast outlet. We are there. And if for some reason you search for us and we are not, tell me about it. I will make sure that we get on that if at all possible. Rate us 5 stars because that helps us a lot. Tell your friends, tell complete strangers, plaster signs all over the place with the Locked On Celtics logo. Just whatever you need to do to spread the word. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.